You're listening to Self-Propelled, a podcast that explores the process of turning ideas into reality and the secrets behind keeping up momentum once you've started. I'm Dave Cornthwaite, and for 15 years I've experimented my way through a series of personal and social adventures, including Expedition 1000, a self-set mission to complete 25 different non-motorized journeys, each over 1,000 miles. I also founded the Yes Tribe, an optimistic community bonded by the idea of making the most of their time and potential, often by saying yes more. Join me for stories and conversations with self-starters, athletes, and entrepreneurs who need nothing more than a good idea to add a little fuel to that pilot light burning deep within us all. Welcome back to the Self-Propelled Podcast. Holly Shalito is an all-round hairdressing, singing, performing, house and pet sitter who has been freelancing for 8 years. In between travelling around, cutting and colouring hair, styling hair for photo and film shoots, and looking after other people's homes, Holly has gone from bedroom musician to professional singer-songwriter. She likes nothing more than to make people feel wonderful, hang out with animals, and perform music to lovely crowds. For a hearty mix of pet sitting and music, check out Holly Shalito Music on Instagram. Holly, welcome to Self-Propelled.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you here. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. I'm very well, all things considered.
All things considered. Well, let's not consider all things just yet. First of all, I want to say happy birthday for yesterday.
Ah, thank you very much.
It's a strange time to have a birthday, I'd imagine. What did you get up to?
Yeah, it was, well, I mean, I'm kind of happy. It was my 33rd birthday, which I've actually been quite excited about. There's something quite magical about the double three. I don't know what that is yet. I'm yet to find out, but I have an entire year to find that out. So I've been kind of excited about it. And then when it came round, we were just at this point where it was like, actually, you're not supposed to go anywhere or see anybody. And I was secretly quite happy about that. It's quite nice having an excuse to not do things. And just to stay in. So I stayed in with my mum and my sister, and we cooked cauliflower cheese and we had a big focaccia. It was very, very a birthday of someone in their 30s, I'd say.
Hey, you wait till you get to your 40s.
I can't wait. I've heard it just gets better continually from this point on.
I'd like to think that all of the guests that I invite onto this podcast are pretty busy in a good way, you know, self-sustainingly busy. So I almost feel the same about this current crisis, that it's actually really nice to have a decent excuse to stay in and work on other stuff. I confess I've spent the last half an hour or so before we switched on Skype listening to your tunes on Spotify, and I'm feeling properly rejuvenated now.
Oh, that's great.
Having been lucky enough to hear a couple of your tunes live at Yesterval last year, it's really great just to see that you've got an online presence now, and so much has happened since then. I'd love to dig into your career. But first of all, can you explain where you are? Where are you talking to me from?
I'm actually at home, which is unusual for me. The last year, my house sitting really kind of... For some magical reason, all of my house sitting bookings just slotted almost back to back, and the odd day in between. So I haven't really been at home that much. But this time of year is often quite quiet. Ramping up towards Easter, it starts to get booked again. So I am actually in my own house for an unforeseen amount of time.
Yeah, welcome to the country. You don't have to give us your exact address and house number, but where is home, and what does the room look like that you're in right now?
It's very near Henley, very near the Yesswoods, actually.
Oh, Henley-on-Thames.
Yeah. And the room that I'm in looks very full of things, much like the rest of our house. It's an all-girl household, so it's got lots of photos and ornaments and hearts everywhere.
How many people do you live with?
I actually only live with my mum, but my sister has moved back in because my dad has just come back from a tour early from Australia, so he's having to self-isolate, although I hate that word. He's having to be on his own for a little while. So my sister moved back in with us. So there's the three ladies.
Three ladies. All right. Good to know. Now the scene is set. I'd love to start by digging in a little bit to your very varied career. What came first, the house sitting or the hairdressing or something else?
The first, very first of all, I was a photographer. And I'd say that's the thing that I probably wish I had more time to pick up, which maybe this this prolonged amount of nothingness might inspire me to pick my camera back up. But at the time, I came out of college and worked as an assistant with another photographer, and the hairdressing apprenticeship sort of landed at my feet, much like a lot of things in my life have just sort of presented themselves to me. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that for a bit. I've always been interested in it. And I always used to change my own hair a lot, which was actually turned out how I got the job. And the hairdresser that used to come to the house, who did my mum's hair, said, well, if you're seriously thinking about it, we've just opened a new salon in Wallingford and we really need trainees and you'd be great for the job. So I went in and a week later I had a job. So I kind of left the photography on the back burner, never really picked it back up. The Instagram really helps me fill that void, actually. It's probably why I'm so active on Instagram, I think.
Have you always been the type of person to, you know, recognize an opportunity and then go straight for it, much like they're heading into a hairdressing career?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of coined the phrase that I'm one of life's floaters, which but in that sense, I don't have a specific direction I want my life to go in. I'm quite happy to just float around and then things come to me and I'm like, yeah, I'll give that a go for a bit. And the hairdressing I really thought was just going to be a fallback plan. I was really like, I can always make money from this for the rest of my life, no matter what else I choose to do. And 13 years later, I'm still doing it. So,
and it still remains a fallback plan in case you end up doing something else.
Yeah. And it's actually enabled me, from being freelance, it's enabled me to take on other things and essentially have my fingers in many pies.
Do you feel like, as someone who does have fingers in many pies, having that fallback plan, you know that there's always that cushion of income from hairdressing, which is an industry that is never going to die. Do you feel like that gives you a little bit more confidence to take on other opportunities?
Yeah, I would say so. And that was kind of the idea with it when it came up, was that people's hair is always going to grow. And unless somebody invents some kind of tool for people to be able to do it themselves, you're always going to have a job somewhere. And the cool thing about it that I actually didn't think about before I got into it was the fact that you can travel as a hairdresser. All you need to take is your scissors, really, and a comb. And you can be anywhere doing anybody's hair. So it's very transportable, which is also very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. You say that people don't do it themselves. You're going to hate me for this, but rather than
I'm sure
rather than my I've been I suppose self-propelled for the last 15 years or so, and yeah. Rather than have a regular cushion of income, I don't really have any skill that I know I can always fall back on. But my cushion is that I don't spend much money. And Way back when, I just decided, wow, you know, they're charging £15 just to do a normal haircut on a guy. I don't really care how I look. So I've been cutting my own hair for 15 years just with some clippers. Is that something you generally recommend to people?
I know plenty of my friends who have cut their own hair for a long time. I cut my own hair for a very long time. From going freelance, cut my own hair. I think if you can do it, like, why wouldn't you? Why would you get someone else to do it? If you're not that fussed about it looking like a magazine haircut, then like, it's like anything else that you can do for yourself, isn't it? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I don't want to use this podcast to encourage too many people to take up. Otherwise, there goes your cushion.
Outside of that, I have also seen many terrible, as I'm sure you have, videos online of people trying to cut their own fringes and trying to curl in the wrong way and snapping their hair off. Like, they're alongside there being many positives to doing it yourself, there's also a lot of things that can go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a dangerous game.
Mastering the backwards, everything moving in a different direction because you have to use a mirror to cut the back of your head is quite a skill.
That's obviously the hardest bit. And I've always been fairly resolute about doing my own hair and not asking anyone else to come in, you know, my wife, for example, to come in and do that for me.
Yeah, I think you did get her to cut it at one point, though, didn't you? I'm sure I've seen a picture of that.
Yeah, and it looked much worse than when I did it myself. So that's the last time.
I'm sure she'd love to hear that.
What about house sitting then? How did that come about?
So that also happened almost completely by accident. I looked after a friend of mine's cat while she was on holiday, just as a way of not being at home, basically, getting to live in someone else's house for free. It's always nice. And sort of doing her a favour so she didn't have to put the cat in a cattery. And at the time, I was still doing photo shoots with my sister, who's a makeup artist. So I couldn't really take on dogs. And then didn't really occur to me to be an ongoing thing, but I'd posted a picture on Instagram saying my other friend who had a cat was like, oh, would you look after our cat when we go away? And then the whole thing sort of naturally snowballed from there. And I only did cats for the first summer, really. And one of my longest standing hairdressing clients, who they're very much like family now. I've known them for a long time. And they said, would you look after our dogs? And I was like kind of apprehensive about it, because sometimes the photo shoot work comes in really last minute. So sometimes even like the night before, we can get booked for the following day. And then we could be out from 4 a.m. to 11 p.m., depending on what the photo shoot is and where it is. Mm. And they said, as long as we have a contingency plan and a neighbour that can maybe come in and let the dogs out, would you be up for it? And I was like, yeah. And then they said, well, you do know that people charge for this, don't you? And I was like, do they? They said, yeah. Then that became the easiest second career. I did actually get booked for the Capital Summertime Ball whilst I was looking after those two dogs. And as soon as I left the house to go to work, I was like, I don't want to do this. I want to be back at home with the dogs. It was a real changing moment for me. That was when I had a conversation with my sister and we said, maybe it's time for us to split apart as a duo. You carry on, take our sistership name off with you, and I'm going to stay at home in other people's houses with their animals.
Amazing. Wow. So you actually get paid to house sit now?
Yeah. It's cheaper for most people than sending them off to a cattery or a kennel. I did actually look into the trusted house sitters thing that you did. Once I'd first started looking after cats, I thought there's got to be a way for me to continually do this. And I joined Cat in a Flat. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Yeah, I have.
But I just think just because I live out in the sticks, there weren't many people who wanted a total stranger to come and live in the house, which I guess is totally understandable. So I did a lot of like double day visits to feed cats. And that sort of didn't really work for me because it was more... actually more of a tie to have to visit somewhere twice than it was to just live there.
Of course.
So
do you use a website now, or have you just built up a lot of local clientele?
The fact that I'm a freelance hairdresser really works with it, because when I go to people's houses to do their hair, I often end up talking about the fact that I house it, and then they're like, oh, I didn't know you did that. And so it continues.
So you ride the wave. This is brilliant, Holly.
Yeah, as you... it'd be great. Like, and I was thinking about moving to Bristol for a little while, actually, after meeting Claire through coming to Yesterball. After we went to Iceland together. God, I forgot where we went then. she was like, why don't you just come and live with Bristol with me? And I had been thinking about moving to Bristol. And then when I really sat down and thought about it, I was like, I do have a pretty wicked life. I'd have to start everything from scratch if I moved to a different city now.
Well, you just mentioned Yesterval and Claire, and I know there'll be many people listening in who probably have no idea what Yesterval even is, and certainly won't know who Claire is. So tell me quickly about how that Iceland trip came about.
So when I was telling my friends about this, one of my friends was like, so somebody you don't really know posted a status on Facebook basically saying that they didn't have anybody to go to Iceland with. I was like, I see that it looks like that from the outside, but that's absolutely not what it was. These people that we meet through Yesterval are all sort of solo travellers, adventurous types, and through first aiding at Yesterval, which was such a brilliant weekend, by the way. Like, I've met so many amazing people just in those 3 days, 2 days alone, that I've still kept in contact with. It's such an amazing network. And so when we met at Yesterval, we got on really well. And then we added each other on Facebook. And when she posted about thinking about doing a solo trip to Iceland, but would anybody like to join, immediately, I was like, yes, definitely. And I think when we met at the airport in Iceland, because we flew from separate cities, we started talking straight away. And she was like, it's funny that this has happened this way, because it could have gone completely the other way. We just got on like a house on fire from the moment we met, really. It was great. And we spent that 4 days there constantly laughing. It was probably one of the best trips I've done.
These type of stories are music to my ears, obviously, having founded the Yes Tribe almost five years ago now. Among the best memories for me are events that I haven't even been a part of. You know,
yeah,
Stan,
it'd be really amazing.
It really is great to hear this. And I think for many people, the idea of going on holiday abroad, let alone spending a weekend, you know, near home with complete strangers, might be something that is so far beyond reasonable or normality. What do you think it is that breaks down that openness? What led you to say yes to Claire, as opposed to thinking of all the reasons that you definitely shouldn't go on holiday with some stranger?
I think it's a mixture of things for me. I think I'm very trusting of absolutely everybody, which sometimes is a good thing, sometimes isn't a good thing. And I think having solo traveled quite a lot myself, I thought it would be a good opportunity to travel with somebody else, let somebody else do a bit of the organization, share things a bit more, I suppose, was one of the biggest things for me, because I've done a lot of things on my own, and it is, as much as it's very liberating doing it on your own, it's also amazing to be able to share it with someone. So I think I was just eager to share, I suppose.
And I suppose, you know, you share those memories, and then you've always got someone to bounce that period of your life off against.
I actually was just looking for a picture that I took before Christmas. And so I was just sifting back through the thousands of photos on my phone, and I screenshotted a bunch of them and sent them to Claire just today, because every time I look at them, they just make me laugh, because they make me remember all of it. It's just so great when you've got good memories attached to a time like that.
Yeah. Well, these, we're obviously living in a slightly strange time. And we're trying our best as a community to encourage people to do all of those things that, you know, we often put off because we think, you know, the time will always come. But now we're spending so much time at home, it can be difficult for people who aren't used to spending time at home to work out what to do. And one of those things that I definitely recommend would be to dig into those old photos, you know, clear the phone,
yeah.
And actually look back at all these memories that we've recorded but probably haven't processed or taken in. How do you organize your life? Do you have a to-do list? Are you finding the current coronavirus crisis stay at home difficult to manage?
I immediately wanted to laugh when you asked me that, when you said, do I organize my life? My life is not very organized. I'm almost allergic to routine. I don't do well with routine, although sometimes I think there is a healthy amount of routine to have. I would say that, like, I generally wake up at the same time every day, regardless of setting an alarm, regardless of having to have set an alarm for a long time now, actually, as well. I wake up at 6:58 every morning, and I've got no idea.
There are different types of people. There are some who are able to be spontaneous because they're content with their ability to plan fast, and there are some, and I'm wondering whether you're in this category, who are just open to new things because you're pretty confident they're going to work out. Would you put yourself in that second basket?
Optimistic outlook, which again I think most of the time is great, but sometimes isn't so great. I'd say when I was in my earlier 20s, I got let down a lot, and I remember my dad saying to me, I think it's because you expect everybody to have the same morals and the same outlook as you do, and not everybody does. And that was the first time I'd ever really thought about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think you're probably right, actually.
How were you let down?
Just, I think, part of the growing up, different friends sort of falling away, people not behaving in the same way towards you as you do to them, and being upset about it.
And you mentioned this happened more in your early 20s. Do you think now you're, goodness me, coming towards your mid-30s. Do you think, sorry, Ali.
Right, I'm really comfortable with it. So,
do you think that maturity plays a part in this, not just in your decisions, but in the people you spend time with? You become a better judge of character for those folks you can trust.
Definitely. And I think you can spot the signs of people that you can't, or spot the signs of people that maybe are similar people to ones that you now don't see or don't speak to, or you're definitely, I suppose, wiser to it that comes with age. You can't buy that at an earlier stage, I don't think.
Yeah, you have to learn it. Do you think, would you consider yourself having thin or thick skin when friends or anyone do let you down, when you go through disappointment or challenge, how would you define your coping mechanism?
I'd like to think that I'm thick-skinned, but I think everyone that knows me, if my mum and my sister could hear me saying this right now, they'd laugh. I think I'm probably quite thin-skinned. I'm very typically a Pisces through and through. So I'm very emotional and very perceptive, I suppose. So I think I sort of preempt things going wrong before they go wrong. And then when they do go wrong, I get really upset about it.
even though you were pretty sure it was coming.
Yeah, but then maybe that's something that's also come with age. I think maybe before I didn't see it coming.
Let's talk about coronavirus. We can't get away from it now.
No,
we are.
It is everywhere.
We're recording this interview on the 19th of March, and slowly it feels like the country is about to go into lockdown. How is this situation affecting your life and work?
It feels very strange, which I'm sure it does for a lot of people. I've already had quite a lot of all of my April house sit work, which actually wasn't like big chunks. They were lots of sort of 2 or 3 days at a time. They've all cancelled. So my April is now a lot freer than it originally was. And also I had a friend getting married. I think her wedding's going to be cancelled. So I'm much more of a free agent in April than I thought I was going to be. And people haven't really forward booked haircuts just because I think everything's so uncertain.
Mm.
That people can't say that they definitely want me to come around in 6 weeks to cut their hair again, because we don't know what we're going to be doing in 6 weeks. We don't know how much money everybody's going to have in 6 weeks.
And so, I suppose if people are locked away in their homes, they probably don't need to look as good as they'd like to if they were going out in public.
My thinking, but I went to do a haircut yesterday. I did a whole family. They're lovely friends of mine. And they said this could be a real booming time for you because people can't leave the house, but are still having to do sort of business calls. So they still need to look fairly all right. I don't think it's on the same scale as when people do have to go into work. But they said you might find that, especially if you are willing to maybe drop your prices a bit and do a bit of a deal for people because people don't have as much money, then maybe this would be the right time for you because everybody needs people to come to them because people can't go out.
Well, there are definitely opportunities to be found in this situation, certainly if you're open-minded. And that sounds to me like a realistic proposition. Certainly setting off on this new podcast journey, I've wanted to do this for a while and was just gearing up for it before coronavirus hit home. But it's actually turned out to be the best possible time because I wanted to get ahead of the curve and record a lot of interviews. And now every self-employed person that I want to interview is at home doing not much. Availability. I know this is early days and it's hard to know what's going to happen, but would you say that this threatens to be one of the biggest challenges of your life?
I would probably say the current outlook that is that financially it might be one of the biggest. I think not just in a personal way, but for everybody. And that's what was making me think when they were saying to me yesterday, this could be a great opportunity for you. I was like, but do I really want to be the person who's making money when everyone else is losing money? Like, that makes me feel like a really bad person.
But remember also, yeah, I understand that guilt. At the same time, the show must go on.
Yeah,
and providing a service like hairdressing, it's not just hairdressing, it's, you know, community, it's conversation. Mm. And that's so important as well.
Yeah, it's very true. I think that's one of the things that I love the most about doing hair, is that I get to travel around all of my local area. I get to go into people's houses, which is so different to a salon situation. It's much more personal. We get to chat for like an hour, have a cup of tea or a coffee and really catch up with each other. And then I leave and I've left them feeling better about themselves, physically and mentally, I think. And I feel better because we get to sort of share experiences and to some extent offload on each other, I suppose, depending on what the conversation, which type of conversation arises.
Of course, and that's always a healthy thing.
Definitely.
With all of these potential challenges ahead, some we can only imagine, how do you keep yourself optimistic?
I've only had like one tiny panic about it so far. But I think because I'm naturally optimistic. I'm very thankful that my brain seems to be naturally that way. But the night before my birthday, I woke up at 2:45 a.m. and suddenly was like, oh, God, what's going to happen? Like, it really, I don't know why it happened in the middle of the night. Maybe I must have been dreaming about it. And I suddenly was just thinking, where are we going to go from here? What's going to happen? What happens if we do end up out of work for the next 3 months? What's going to happen to the value of money? And I think things are especially bad in the middle of the night as well.
Mm.
Well, I just need to think about something else, go to sleep and wake up and it'll be my birthday and everything will be fine.
Holly, it's so, so good to talk to you. Before we wrap up, I'd love to ask you a few questions. I've got a pile of questions that I always ask people when I'm traveling. I won't ask you them all because it's a big pile, but I'd love to ask you a few. Are you open to the challenge?
Definitely.
What does adventure mean to you?
Adventure means taking a leap of faith and doing something you're scared of.
What are you most proud of?
Ooh. I think at this point in my life, my current musical career, if we can call it that now, I suppose now I'm a Spotify artist, you can, because that was something I was so terrified to do for such a long time. And I almost can't believe that it's done.
Before I carry on with other questions, let's talk about the music. It's something we've missed out. Obviously, tell me how this started. How long did you consider yourself a bedroom musician, and then what changed?
So I learned the bass first when I was about 14, because my dad is a sound engineer and a tour manager, and also underneath all of that, a musician. So he was always playing guitar around the house when we were kids. And I learned the bass because it was the easiest one to learn. Really, it's just one note at a time. And then I picked up a guitar, and I think I started writing songs when I was about 14. I mean, I dread to think what they sound like now I'm an adult. I wouldn't want to go back and hear them now. They were very much about heartbreak, and which boy didn't fancy me at the time. And then I'd say by the time I was in my 20s, I'd really taught myself all of the chords just by learning other people's songs that I loved. And then talked about doing open mic nights for about 7 years and didn't do it. And my dad slowly gifted me things. He bought me a guitar that I could plug in that has a tuner built in so I could just rock up to an open mic night. He bought me a cable, bought me a tuner, all of these things to kind of encourage me. And it just took such a long time to pluck up the courage, because I figured out through having a Reiki session that I was sort of stunted by a performance that I ruined at school playing the piano. And it sort of scarred me, I suppose, and the fear had stayed with me forever.
Huh.
So I built up the confidence eventually, just as I was about to turn 30, to do an open mic night. And it was as terrifying as I had imagined it would be. I felt sick all day. I went to do it twice and chickened out. And this final time, I was like, today's the day, I'm going to go. And then it was just kind of upwards from there, really. That was the hardest one. And I'd say for about 18 months, it was still terrifying every time I played. And I've now, 2 and a bit years in, got to a point where I can perform and I don't feel terrifyingly shaky and like I'm exposing myself anymore. It now feels like something that I do, which it did take a long time. And it's just been the most amazing journey, really.
That's so cool. What would you say to other people who have a musical or voice talent, and they're held back by nerves and maybe a disastrous performance when they were younger, or just anxiety? What would you say to them?
I'd say, and I think this is kind of a blanket term for any type of anxiety, is that the fear in your head is bigger than what it is in real life. And the longer, I'd say from my own experience, the longer you leave it, the harder it gets. So I would just start small and do a tiny step towards where you want to be. and then just see what happens. You'll find you keep on walking and you don't really look back.
Great advice. Okay, we're back to the questions.
Okay.
What's your favourite place and why?
I immediately want to say home and my bed because it's comfortable and safe.
That's allowable. If you had to get out of your home, where would it be?
To the woods. I love being in the woods. I love being surrounded by trees.
If you could change anything in your life, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Probably say, personally, to have a little bit more drive, because I don't think it's something that I have an abundance of.
What are you most afraid of right now?
Everybody being out of work for a very long time.
What does living a good life mean to you?
Being happy and comfortable and around people that I love.
Talking of happy, what's been the happiest moment of your life?
The first memory that came back to me when you said that was on my 18th birthday. My dad was on tour, and I say that with a hand gesture that you can't see because it's a podcast. My mum had said I couldn't open my birthday present until one of my best friends at the time came round. And so I immediately thought I was getting a car, which was very naive. And I spoke to my dad and he said, I'm in Switzerland, I'm driving through the mountains, happy birthday, I'm really sorry I can't be there. And then he said, oh, I think I'm going to go out of signal because we're going through the mountains. And it cut off, and then the front door rang and it was my dad, and I burst into tears. It was the first time to my knowledge at that point, it was the first time that I'd ever hysterically happy cried.
Ah, beautiful surprise.
Yeah, it was really lovely. I had absolutely no idea.
What's the most spur of the moment crazy adventure you've ever taken on?
I've done quite a few. I would say the first time I went away on my own, I decided that I wanted to go to Costa Rica as a 30th birthday present to myself. It was just before I turned 31, and I only had my first night in a hostel booked and my flight out there and my flight home, so all of the time in between. I had 5 weeks, one night in a hostel booked, and ultimate freedom after that.
Magic.
It really was. Costa Rica is magic.
Could you tell me a story about kindness? Or what does kindness mean to you, if a particular story doesn't jump to mind?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a particular story that jumps to mind. I don't think there is for kindness, which is ridiculous, really, because I have a lot of kindness in my life. Kindness means to me doing something for somebody that brings the other person joy and not you. But I suppose in that sense, it brings you joy because it brings the other person joy. So I guess kindness is just sharing love. That sounds so hippie, doesn't it?
You pulled that answer out of the bag, I'm telling you. Final question. Finish this sentence. The most important thing in life is?
Family, is what I wanted to say straight away.
That feels like a pretty decent answer.
Yeah.
Holly, thanks so much for taking 36 minutes and 28 seconds out of your first day of being 33.
It's been a wonderful way to spend 36 minutes.
It's been so good to talk to you. If you've enjoyed listening to Holly's stories, please find out more about her work and music on Holly Shalito Music on both Facebook and Instagram. And definitely look her up on Spotify as well. You spell Shalito Shillito. Holly, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, Dave. Thanks.
Please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. And if you enjoy the podcast, I'd love it if you could leave a thoughtful review. Stay tuned for a feast of inspirational guests and tales that I very much hope will encourage you to begin your own new journey.